Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Fission radio show. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate it. We do not have a guest today, which I kind of did intentionally because I like to be able to report the news and talk about things that are on my mind since I have this venue. The first thing I want to say is I heard last night on Michael's show, Primer Time, that they are going to be leaving their show because his brother got deployed, and I feel really bad about them leaving the show, and I feel really bad about his brother being deployed. I would rather that people call for the impeachment of the lunatic in the White House than allow themselves to be thrown into a war zone. And this is just one example of how hyper-militarization destroys people's lives. I pray to God that his brother will be safe and come back sooner than later, and that we can remove the lunatic in the White House and his whole gang of thieves that seems to be intentionally raping our country. I wanted to talk to you. There is actually a story. I was trying to find out how many people are being shipped off to the over to South Korea, and you can't really get a report on it. There's on foreignpolicymagazine.com, October 25th, more U.S. carriers arrive in Pacific as North Korea diplomacy falls apart. It's not really falling apart. Trump just has no idea what diplomacy is. He's a complete offender. Frankly, he should. The reason that Donald Trump is in the White House is because our court systems fail us. Because he has been sued by many people and bought his way out of it. There are, I think he's got 12 cases, allegations of assault against him right this second from the number of women he assaulted, which he admitted on tape he does all the time. You know, so we're in a big run for our money here in terms of, and congratulations, Senator Flake and Corker, for standing up. Maybe that will give other senators some courage to stand up to this guy who is literally destroying our country as we speak. There was a story in the foreign press, in the Foreign Policy magazine. I was looking for stories outside of the Googles and the usual suspects, you know, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal. I wanted to find something else. I went to foreign policy. I found this article called Trump is Tarnishing the Military Brass. Actually, when I read it, I thought, you know, they're sort of tarnishing themselves. They ought to have held themselves up to a higher standard and looked at this guy and said, you, are a complete disaster, and we're not playing games with you. This is not a game. This is called real life, and it's the future of our children. We're talking about the future of our children, which is why we can't forget about Fukushima or the radioactive contaminations that are everywhere in our planet right now. Listen to what this story says. The president's generals are serving the country at the expense of the reputation of its armed forces. And when I read that, I thought about Nick, Mike's brother. Like, that really upset me last night when I was listening to their radio show to hear that he's being deployed to South Korea. Because that means that this monster, Trump, plans on doing something dramatic. And it's not like a nuclear war, because we don't need to have nuclear war. Nuclear war is kind of a deterrent on its own. But, I mean, let's face it, folks. We already have a nuclear war. It's called Fukushima. It's called Hanford. It's called Chernobyl. It's called Three Mile Island. It's called WIPP. That's the nuclear war. It's called the Nuclear Waste Policy Amendment Act of 2017. That's the nuclear war. You know, it is so outrageous. I want to read this story, but while I'm thinking about that, I'm going to go to my email. And Kai Hushka, who is going to be a guest from Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, asked me, he's going to be on, I believe, next Wednesday or Tuesday. I think it's on Halloween, actually, is when he's coming. But there is an environmental conference coming up. Let me see if I can see what he asked me to read. There will be a panel, a symposium on Friday, October 27th, on the rights of nature. So let me open that up, because that is a pretty interesting little thing, the rights of nature. That is where, I mean, I don't know if many of you were aware, but in New Zealand, they passed a law that said that primary river running through New Zealand, it has the right to exist. It has its own entity. It has the rights to exist. I'm going to read you this quick press briefing from CELDEF, which is Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. And they are not like the Environmental Legal Defense Fund, who have sold themselves out. These are actually real. Most of them are attorneys and people fighting the good fight, defending people who have been and are being offended and harmed by contamination. So the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, with its International Rights Center for the Rights of Nature, is partnering with Tulane Law School to host the Rights of Nature Symposium, Driving Rights of Nature into Law, Opportunities, Risks, and Obstacles. The symposium will bring together key leaders in the rights of nature movement from Ecuador, Nepal, the United States, and other countries, as well as from local communities and tribal nations. Today, communities, people, and even governments are recognizing that there is a need to make a fundamental shift in humankind's relationship with the natural world by placing the highest protections on nature through the recognition of legal rights. Join us at the symposium to learn about the rights of nature and how you can become involved in this growing movement. See below for symposium presenters and sponsors. Go here for information on live streaming. There's a live click. Registration is not required for live streaming, for the conference program and the key conference information. The presenters: Professor Oliver Hook, Tulane University Law School. Mr. Hook attended Harvard College 1960 and Georgetown Law School 1967. Took him 7 years to get through law school. Wonder how long it's going to take me. With three intervening years of the U.S. Army, predominantly Korea, he served as a federal prosecutor in the U.S. Attorney's Office in Washington in 71. Blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to read you his background. And then Richard Mott, Wallace Global Fund. Richard N. Mott is director for environment at Wallace Global Fund. Before coming to WGF in 67, he was vice president for the international policy of World Wildlife Fund in the United States. So where were these people in fighting the nuclear fight a long time ago? This is my question to all of these people. I can't wait to talk to Kai. By the time we talk to Kai, this symposium will have happened. And I really want to get his take on how is it that we've had all these environmental activists since they turned down the nuclear power plants in the 80s, and they've watched the incremental pollution of... This leads me to something else. And, you know, my guess is they don't know anything about it, just like I did not until yesterday. Ryan Talbot, Allegheny Defense Project, born and raised in Allegheny National Forest in northern Pennsylvania. He's going to be a speaker. He holds a bachelor's degree in environmental biology from Clarion University. Tammy Belinsky, environmental lawyer from Virginia. Her litigation includes exposing mold exposure claims, right of way disputes, and environmental causes. You know what? We should hook her up to Chuck Hyman, because all of her mold exposure people could actually be buying his product and she could recommend him. That's how it works. Her name is Tammy Belinsky, environmental lawyer in Virginia, Belinsky. Lindsay Schroman Warren, Whrin, Shearwater lawyer. She works as a lawyer, primarily litigating constitutional law, issues of relative power of the people, governments, and corporation. That's a guy. He has defended ecosystems' ability to be recognized by the courts, the people's power of direct democracy, and activists subjected to domestic military spying. Wow. Let's see who else. Hugo Echeverria. He's an attorney from Ecuador. He is a member of the World Commission of Environmental Law. He practices environmental law since 2001. He teaches environmental law at undergraduate and graduate programs in Ecuador. See what else. Man, this is going to be a good symposium. I wish I could go. And then they have some CELDEF people. Mari Margill, Associate Director of CELDEF. Thomas Lindsay, Attorney and Executive Director of CELDEF. I've heard him speak. He's super awesome. If you guys want to watch a really good talk about community rights, type in community rights in YouTube, and his name is Thomas Lindsay, Linzey. He's given several very compelling speeches that are up on YouTube that are super awesome. Natalia Green from Pachamama Alliance in Ecuador. These are the people that got Ecuador the Rights of Nature. She's the focal point for the Rights of Nature in Ecuador. So now Ecuador, they changed their constitution, for those of you that don't know, that said that nature has its own rights. You can't just come in and destroy nature. So they passed their constitution, and Exxon and all those people are still fighting them. Michelle Maloney, Australia Earth Law Alliances. Man, this is going to be a long. Shrawan Sharma, Center for Economic and Social Development in Nepal. And Pella Thiel, co-founder of the Swedish Transition Network and End Ecocide Sweden, and has successfully put ecocide law on the political agenda. Wow. Winona LaDuke, our favorite. We love Winona. Is an internationally renowned activist working on issues, sustained development, energy renewal, and food systems. She lives and works on the White Earth Reservation in northern Minnesota and was 2 times right on presidential candidate with Ralph Nader for the Green Party. Imagine how much healthier our country would have been if we would have embraced that agenda, folks. I venture to say that we as world leaders would have changed the way things would have transpired in the right now. Like, we would not have the incredibly high level of toxicity that we have on our planet right now. Karina Gore is, I wonder if she's related to the you-know-who. Karina Gore is an attorney, advocate, and writer for The Educator, and serves as director for the Center for Earth Ethics. Wouldn't that be hilarious if she was related to Al Gore? Director of the Center for Earth Ethics. That's kind of funny that she's even associated with anything that's ethical if she's related to you know who. Oh, yeah. It says it at the end of the bio. She's the eldest child of Al and Tipper Gore. I don't know if you guys see the humor in that, but I do. I didn't expect that. Director for the Center of Earth Ethics, Al Gore. His daughter has anything to do with ethics. The man who kept his trap shut. Well, Bush, like, stole the election right out from under our noses so they could get their financial agenda through. Wow. The Unpatriot Act, taking away people's civil liberties. Ben Price, CELDEF. He's been working with CELDEF since 2004. Man, this is a lot of people. This is a big symposium. Shannon Biggs, Movement Rights, co-founder and executive director of Movement Rights, advancing legal rights for communities, indigenous people, and ecosystems. Francisco Bustamante in Ecuador. He is energy and environmental law, Tulane University, 08, law degree. I don't know where he's working. His bio doesn't say. Oh, it does say he's teaching in constitutional, environmental, and teaching constitution, environmental, and constitutional procedure courses in environmental law at the Universidad Internacional del Ecuador since 2009. Jason Flores Williams, law office, spent his life in the front lines of the American condition. You can tell that people wrote their own bios. I have no idea what this is. JFW has appeared as both an author and attorney on CNN, BBC, New York Times. What's your gig, dude? It's got a big, long... I guess he wrote books. He also represents several defendants who were arrested on Inauguration Day in a mass prosecution in which the government had charged more than 200 protesters with conspiracy, so that they are now facing more than 75 years each for protesting Donald Trump. Do you guys get that? Donald Trump and the Jeff Sessions Attorney General's office, they are prosecuting 200 protesters in our country. There are 200 people in our country who are in a legal wrangle with the government, facing up to 75 years for protesting. Okay, this is what gets me up and going every morning. It's why I'm here. It's why I appreciate the voice. And this is really why I'm sad to see Michael and Nick go, because they give a different voice. They have a completely, I mean, Nick's putting his body, changing his life, and going to South Korea. We obviously could not be further from each other politically. But we both have the same heart about being Americans. And I find it despicable that traitor Trump is just allowed to run rampant and roll over people's civil rights and civil liberties far worse than they did since the Unpatriot Act. The cowards in Congress have refused to change the Unpatriot Act. Everybody's like, yay, Jeff Sessions, Jeff Flake, and, you know, Corker, Bob Corker. You know, these were two staunch, very conservative Republicans. You know why they have to speak out? Because this guy is immoral. He says things that are despicable. If you're with Donald Trump, you need therapy because the man has a mental illness. Instead of saying, oh my God, I messed up communicating with you on what I meant about your husband. I'm really sorry you took it the wrong way. I really apologize. Please, don't let my words hurt you anymore. He's like made it a big political deal, and now people are abusing the woman who wears a hat in Congress. Who cares? I mean, it is so outrageous. This is why we have to do this. Let me get back to this announcement. I beg your pardon. That sort of set me off a little bit. There are a couple more people. We are talking about the first U.S. Rights of Nature Symposium at Tulane University, Friday, October 27th, 2017. That's this Friday. So if you're anywhere near there, make an effort to go. We have Wanila LaDuke, Ben Price, Francisco Bustamante. There's more people, so I'm going to get back down to this. Bill Greendeer is a tribal member of the Hukuk Nation, pronounced Hu-Chunk, in Wisconsin, Ho-Chunk Nation. Bill is a member of the Deer Clan devoted to protecting the sacred earth and water. His Ho-Chunk name is Rukmani, which means deer that runs into the south wind. He has also been active in the opposition of the frac sand mining and land mining of the gift of the Creator. Yeah, well, that's not working, brother. Dion Ban, Navajo Nation, Grand Canyon Trust, is originally from the community of Tohatchi, New Mexico, and a member of the Navajo Nation. He earned his BS in Environmental Studies in Northern Arizona, so he'll be there. Casey Camp Horneneck, Ponca Tribe of Oklahoma. Let's see. Her Ponca name is Suthi, and is an elder and a tribal councilwoman of the Ponca Tribe of Oklahoma, as well as an award-winning actress. Okay. So those are all the people that are going to be there. It's quite a lineup, folks. So if you are anywhere near New Orleans, please do go to this, because I wish I could go. That would be super awesome. This whole idea about environment, that nature has rights of its own. We don't have a right to destroy nature. I think that is as Kai will share with us, it's kind of a new concept, just as women's rights was a new concept, rights for African Americans, for the slaves, for the Chinese. All of this was new. And it's the only place that we can go. We don't really have a choice if we're going to hang on to our little planet. It's a tiny little place. Here we are from Science News. I want to get back to what drives me to come to this radio show 3 times a week. And by the way, there's going to be there've been a bit of changes to my lineup Monday through Friday. That is originally kind of how it settled down. Barry Prince is taking over on Friday. I think that this Friday will be the last time that I'm filling in for him, but I'm not sure. So I think next Friday he'll be taking over on Fridays. And then tomorrow, I interviewed Jerome Hebert a couple of times. He's a YouTuber. He's called the Sane Environmentalist. He does nuclear readings, and he actually reads the I Ching on his YouTube channel. He has a really different kind of philosophy. Because I have this term until December, I have class at 9 o'clock in the morning on Thursdays. So we have been running reruns or pre-recorded interviews. So I asked Jerome if he wanted to fill in for me live. So he's going to attempt to do that on Thursdays and see if he likes it. If he likes it, he'll just keep Thursdays, but we'll see how all this goes. So in the meantime, it's going to be Monday, Wednesday, Friday will be me interviewing or talking live like now. Or maybe even a pre-recorded interview. I'll put the pre-records on these days, because sometimes my guests require that I pre-record because they can't be live. And then it will be Jerome and Barry Prince. And we're not changing my name or any of the stuff. If you notice, my intro says Monday, Wednesday, Friday still. We're sticking with it. It's all right. And as you've seen, sadly, like with Nick and Michael leaving, with the Primer Time show, their show is called The Primer Time. If you want to check out the podcast, they're pretty interesting. We have very interesting people on this radio station, but it comes and goes because people have lives. It's a volunteer station. Nobody gets a paycheck, including our producer who works her tail off. And you should actually, her show, the one right before me, it's called Before the First Cup with Jules, is awesome. Like, if you want to find out like what's really going on with the tech industry, vaccines, all kinds of stuff, you should listen to her show. She finds articles and reads them and comments because she understands all that science stuff. She was a techie person for a super long time professionally. I found an article this morning called Science News, from the Science News. What is the date? October 2nd. And I thought I'd read it again. I know we reported on it at the time. It's a bit shocking, but it's still there, and it's still shocking. And it does. There's a lot of things that make you really mad about it. This is the title, Radioactive Material from Fukushima Disaster Turns Up in a Surprising Place. Surprising. This is what's hilarious. That's why I picked the title, because the title is hilarious. They have now show somewhat salty groundwater beneath sandy beaches 10 kilometers away, a new study shows. So why is that surprising? 10 kilometers is not very far away, you know. And it says radioactive material is leaching into the Pacific Ocean at unexpected places. Scientists tested for radioactivity at 8 different beaches within 100 kilometers of the plant, which experienced 3 reactor meltdowns when an earthquake, blah, blah. Oceans and rivers and fresh groundwater sources are typically monitored for radioactivity following a nuclear accident. But several years following the disaster, those weren't the most contaminated water sources. Instead, brackish groundwater beneath the beaches has accumulated the second highest levels of radioactive element, surpassed only by the groundwater directly beneath the reactor, researchers report on October 2nd. Wow. That is stunning. I don't know if you guys aren't stunned by that, but that stunned me. In the wake of the 2011 seawater tainted high levels of cesium-137, probably traveled along the coast and lapped against these beaches, proposed study co-author Virginie Senile, Virginie Senile, was he one of the guys that was, no, he wasn't, who did the work at the Woodhull Institution, Massachusetts. I'm going to pull up that article on CELDEF again, because that kind of, I wonder, let me see, I'm going to open this back up. Hold on, sorry about this, folks. Is this one of the guys speaking at this, was that who it was? Was that who it was? No, that wasn't him. I must have read another article with this guy's name in it, Senile, because they get paid to lie to us. This, let's just be really clear. This is their job, is to lie to us. That is exactly what their job is. In the let's see. I'm sorry, I got sidetracked by that name. Some cesium stuck in the sand and over time percolated down to the brackish water beneath. Now the radioactive material is steadily making its way back into the ocean. The groundwater is releasing the cesium into the coastal oceans at a rate that's on par with the leakage of cesium into the ocean from the reactor site itself. Since this water isn't a source of drinking water in underground, don't worry about it. The contamination isn't an immediate public health threat. Lord. But with half the world's nuclear power plants located on coastlines, such areas are potentially important contamination reservoirs and release sites to monitor after future accidents. These people are completely insane to say that there is nothing there. Wow. Let me see what this says. Unexpected sources of Fukushima radiation to coastal of Japan. This is the... There's another Ken Buesler, Virginie Senile. This is their original thing. Listen to how they really, it's stunning the way they just word it as if it's not a big deal. Although this ongoing source is not present a public health issue for Japan, the release of cesiums of this type and scale need to be considered in a nuclear power plant monitoring scenarios of the future. Wow. Don't worry about it, folks. It's no big deal. That's part of what's really annoying is the normalizing of death that we have. We are expected to just accept it, the normalizing of death. If anybody wants to give me a call, you can at 718-717-8106. 718-717-8106 if you want to give me a call to have a conversation about this. By the way, I've heard that January 20th is going to be Impeach Trump Day. If they haven't done it already, I personally am out in the streets on January 20th, 2018. I'm kind of afraid of Donald Trump's 9/11. We've had his Benghazi. What's the other scandal that he's had? He's had his Katrina. I mean, the guy, I wonder what he's going to do. Oh, yeah, now, and the emails. He's had the email scandals, too. Because you do know that his own children were using their personal servers in the White House. Just like the evil Clinton. That's because they're all exactly alike, folks. They're all part of the same team. Team, let's make us rich and everybody else poor. That's the team. Donald Trump, Kaiser Wilhelm parallels are getting scary. This is a story from October 12th. Stephen M. Walt. Stephen M. Walt is a very well-known social scientist. In fact, I am reading one of his books in school right now, and there's another book that I had to read on this guy. He's a big social scientist, and this is in foreign policy. That's interesting. He's actually done a lot of work. At this point, it's not exactly headline news that America is being led, that is, if that is even the right word, by a bizarre and erratic president. 9 months into Donald Trump's administration, all those Republican foreign policy experts who warned that he was unfitted to the office, unquote, during the 2016 campaign have been proven right. This situation may be something of a first for Americans, though some presidents had their quirks, but plenty of other countries have had to deal with outlandish buffoons, or worse, who somehow made it to high office. Trump is frequently compared to former Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi, another glib, unscrupulous, lying, preening sexual predator who managed to get elected even though his personal conduct was deplorable and his policies were a disaster. Strutting and corrupting popinjays like Benito Mussolini, Carlos Menem, and Jean-Bédel Bokassa of the Central African Republic come to mind as well, along with other dictators who constructed cults of personality about themselves and treated their countries as a personal possession. But I've been struck by the parallels between POTUS, excuse me, I'm going to read that sentence again. But lately, I've been struck by the parallels between POTUS 45 and the last Hohenzollern Emperor, Kaiser Wilhelm II. I'm not the first person to notice the similarities. Doug Bandow of the Cato Institute wrote a nice piece on this topic in January, but the common features go beyond their individualistic characteristics. Not only do Trump and the Kaiser share some unfortunate personality traits, but there are also striking similarities between the conditions in the Wilhelmine Germany and the situation in the United States today. There are some important differences, but they are not entirely reassuring. Consider first the personalities of these two leaders. Wilhelm II was, by all accounts, a pretty smart guy, but he frequently acted like a spoiled teenager and was prone to rash and bellicose remarks that undermined Germany's image and international position. In a notorious 1908 interview with the London Daily Telegraph, for example, he declared, "You English are mad, mad, mad as March hares." One wonders what he would have said on Twitter. Wilhelm also had little patience for domestic opposition, saying, "I regard every social democrat as an enemy of the empire and the fatherland." Not to be outdone by Trump, who has called the U.S. media as the enemy of the American people. Historian Thomas Nipperdy once described Wilhelm as a superficial, hasty, restless, unable to relax, without a deeper level of seriousness, without a desire for hard work or drive to see things through to the end, without any sense of sobriety for balances and boundaries, or even for reality and real problems, uncontrollable and scarcely capable of learning from experience, desperate for applause and success. As Bismarck said early in his life, he wanted every day to be his birthday. Another distinguished historian, the late Gordon Craig of Stafford, offered a similar appraisal, writing that Wilhelm had as much intelligence as any European sovereign, and more than most, but his lack of discipline, self-indulgence, his overdeveloped sense of theater, and his fundamental misreading of history prevented him from putting it to effective use. Craig also describes Wilhelm as never having learned anything thoroughly and constantly on the move. German Army Chief of Staff Alfred von Wildersee described Wilhelm in the 1890s as having, quote, a certain understanding of parade ground movements, not, however, of real troop leading. He is extraordinarily restless, dashes back and forth, intervenes in the leadership of generals, give countless and often contradictory orders, and scarcely listens to his advisors. He always wants to win, and when the decision is against him, takes it ill, unquote. Sound familiar? The similarities don't end there. Both men led lives of privilege from birth. Wilhelm was heir to the German throne, and Trump inherited a sizable fortune from his wealthy real estate developer father. Wilhelm had understandably sensitive about his congenitally withered left arm. Trump seems defensible about his small hands. Wilhelm loved military displays and said that he had found his family while serving in the Potsdam Guards. Trump attended military school and admires generals, despite his ignorance of military affairs and his own efforts to evade military service. And like Trump, Wilhelm was fond of traveling with a large and expensive entourage, at public expense, of course, while neglecting his public duties. So much for personal parallels. Now, let's consider some similarities between the Wilhelmine Germany and the contemporary United States. For starters, both countries exhibit the familiar warning signs of excessive military influence. In Germany, the army was essentially a state within a state, and scholars such as Craig, Reinhard Ritter, Fritz Fischer, and Jack Snyder have all documented how military dominance distorted German thinking about its security and led to an over-reliance on military power and an overly confrontational foreign policy. The German military used domestic organizations like the Navy League and the writings of co-opted academics to make a case to the German people. In America, the Pentagon runs its own public relations operations, and weapons manufacturers give generously to think tanks that favor increased defense spending. Moreover, Germany under Wilhelm abandoned Bismarck's sophisticated reliance on diplomacy and subordinated the function to the dictates of the general staff. When asked about the wisdom of the Schlieffen Plan, for example, Foreign Minister Friedrich von Holstein replied, "If the chief of staff considers something imperative, then it is the duty of diplomacy to concur with it and to facilitate it in every way." Instead of war being politics by other means, German diplomacy was supposed to support whatever cockamamie scheme the generals thought up. Wilhelmine Germany did face genuine strategic challenges, with a resentful France on one side and a rising Russia on the other. Yet Berlin consistently exaggerated the actual dangers it faced, especially when one remembers that it eventually took France, Russia, and Great Britain, and later the United States, and nearly won. Even worse, Germany repeatedly acted in ways that solidified the alliance that opposed them, instead of working assiduously to undermine it. When exaggerated German fears about a hypothetical future decline led its leaders to launch a preventive war in 1914, they were, as Bismarck might have put it, committing suicide for fear of death. Yeah, there you go. Committing suicide for fear of death. That's kind of what we've done with Trump, man. One sees a similar pattern in the United States today, where the threat inflation is endemic. The utility of force is exaggerated, and the role of diplomacy is neglected or denigrated. Professional militaries have powerful tendencies to inflate threats because worrying about remote dangers is part of their job, and doing so helps justify a bigger budget. as Britain's Lord Salisbury observed more than a century ago, if you believe the doctors, nothing is wholesome. If you believe the theologians, nothing is innocent. If you believe the soldiers, nothing is safe. They are also prone to think that force can solve a multitude of problems, that when it is in fact a crude instrument that always produces unintended consequences. That's for sure. Just like Nick having to leave his radio show. That's such a drag. Consistent with this pattern, the United States routinely views third-rate powers like Serbia, Iran, Iraq, and others as if they are mortal dangers, treats problems like the Islamic State as if they were existential threats, and tends to assume these difficulties can be solved by blowing up more stuff or sending in another team of special forces. The results of these efforts have been mostly disappointing, yet hardly anyone in Washington is willing to question this approach or even ask our commanders why the world's best military isn't winning more often. As Rosa Brooks has ably shown, this trend began long before Trump became president, but his own policies are making it worse. We have a general atop the Pentagon for the first time since the early 1950s, heading up the National Security Council, and yet another as White House Chief of Staff. At the same time, we have a clueless Secretary of State who is either deliberately trying to destroy the State Department or is doing so in a fit of absent-mindedness. Like Wilhelmine Germany, in short, U.S. foreign policy is increasingly long on brawn, but short on brains. Wilhelmine Germany and Trumpian America share another trait, an inability to get their finances in order. Germany was Europe's most dynamic economy before World War I. It had overtaken Great Britain as an industrial power and was leaving France far behind. It also boasted outstanding university and a world-class scientific establishment. Yet the German state was chronically starved for funds as it tried to maintain Europe's most powerful army, build an expensive modern navy, and pay for social programs that were quite generous by the standards of the time. And why was Germany in this pickle? Because neither wealthy Junker landowners nor rich German industrialists wanted to pay their taxes, and both groups had the political influence to stop the government from raising them. Hello, tax cuts. Does this situation sound like any other country you've heard of? 21st century America suffers from chronic budget deficits at the state and federal levels, in a good part because 1. It spends far more on defense than any other country. 2. Provides lots of entitlement programs for its citizens. 3. Its wealthiest members keep demanding tax cuts, and the riches they already have allow them to buy a lot of political support for this proposal. Meanwhile, the things that really did make America great in the past, a good public education, a working-class infrastructure, world-class universities, and institutions that helped assimilate new arrivals are all atrophying for lack of resources and political commitment. To be sure, there are many ways in which the Wilhelmine Germany and the Trumpian America are different. One of them may reassure you, the other one may keep you up at night. The good news is that America's overall security situation remains far more favorable than Germany's was. Kaiser Wilhelm and his associates did in fact have a hostile great power on either side, a deteriorating relationship with Great Germany, and an ally, Austria-Hungary, was far more of a liability than an asset. The United States, by contrast, remains the only great power in the Western Hemisphere, the only possessor of a truly global projection capability, and the owner of a robust nuclear deterrent, and it has valuable allies in several key regions. What historian C. Van Woodward calls America's free security may still help us survive the incompetent leadership of the current occupant of the Oval Office. Let's hope that is the case, because another critical difference is worrisome. Germany's ruling elite understood Wilhelm's deficiency and did a good job of keeping him away from the actual levers of power. During the July crisis that led to World War I, in fact, Wilhelm was staying at a palace outside Berlin and was, for the most part, out of the loop, in good part because of Chancellor Theobald Bethmann Holweg, knew the Kaiser was a loose cannon and didn't want him screwing the Chancellor's own plans to exploit the crisis. Wilhelm scribbled lots of bellicose marginalia on diplomatic messages and conjured up various scenarios for resolving the crisis, but nobody paid attention either to his rants or to his more sensible suggestions, such as the stillborn halt in Belgrade proposal. Ironically, Wilhelm II bore little direct responsibility for the war, whatever his personal defects may have been. By contrast, Trump is still in charge of the executive branch and, for the most part, is doing his bidding. The adults in the room, James Mattis, H.R. McMaster, and John Kelly, etc., that's frightening, may have been able to temper some of Trump's worst instincts, but he still managed to withdraw from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, alarm key allies, cause a precipitous drop in the global confidence in the United States, seriously, undermine the Iran deal, fuel escalating tensions on the Arabian Peninsula, and repeatedly pour gasoline on the delicate situation with North Korea. Because top officials are still listening to him and following his orders, Trump's personality defects are more worrisome and consequential than Wilhelm's ever were. I say personally, invoke the 25th. Back to the story. We have one more paragraph. All of which suggests that we may need a more effective means for constraining the divider-in-chief. The founding fathers created a divided government because they understood deeply flawed people sometimes get elected, and they did not want the country to be overly vulnerable to one person's flaws and ambitions. They also created mechanisms to remove such a leader when circumstances warrant that. I hope it does not come to that, but for now, I'll take some comfort that such mechanisms exist. You know what? I hadn't read the end of this story, and that ending is what's really got me. That just makes my blood boil. The steam is just coming out of my ears. My earplugs are about to pop off. Because it has come to that. I can't cuss. Thank you, KEPW, for keeping me from cussing. It has come to that, folks. We do need to remove the monster in the White House. The guy, not only him, his whole entire wrecking ball cabinet, Pence, Mnuchin, all those guys, Tillerson, they all, you know, these people make George Bush look like a saint. That's why Bush was super happy over the weekend. Wow. This is where social scientists fail us 100%. It has come to that. We do need to demand they invoke the 25th. All those three people, the quote, adults in the room, if they feel that way about the president, that he's a child who can't comprehend anything, they need to be invoking the 25th. They need to get together. You know why they can't? Because Mike Pence, the other traitor that's in the White House, is protecting this creep. Honestly, Mike Pence is a traitor. He's the American Taliban, folks. Unequivocally, the American Taliban. For goodness sakes. We have about 10 minutes left. If anybody wants to give me a call, it's 718-717-8106. I'd love to chat with you if you want to make a comment. I keep going back to this. I can't believe Primer Time is going to be gone. That's kind of sad. I hope they come back after it. Maybe his brother, the deferral will be delayed. They'll have a second idea about it. Maybe something will happen and they'll be able to stick with it. I know that it said, I think they said at the end that they're going to do their show two more times. I think we have two more shows, but that kind of upset me. That was like, wow. Let's see. I pulled up a bunch of stories, but I do want to get back to something that we talked about yesterday on yesterday's radio show in regards to this bill, H.R. 3053, Nuclear Waste Policy Amendment Act of 2017, and kind of remind you guys that even if this bill fails, like if they refuse to pass it in the Senate and it fails, This bill isn't going anywhere. This is how the nuclear industry works. They keep at it. They keep going. I want to pull up that thing that Donna had showed us from Areva. Now, Areva is the company that makes the tanks and does the testing. They're one of the largest nuclear energy companies in the world, frankly. They went bankrupt in France, and now they're coming here, and they're going to dig in our pockets. They go bankrupt here, and then they'll leave us with the bill. This thing, the amendment background, what they want to do, the purpose of it is they have a clear common understanding of the Amendment 4, including the scope. They want to receive feedback. I don't know about you, but I was dumbfounded to find out that these canisters that we have, all of our nuclear waste in the United States is being stored in not only 3-inch thick containers that we know start leaking in 20 years, and many of them on the list are at that 2018-19 year mark, that they built an external container on the outside and that it vents 24 hours a day. So the idea that really this is the stunning thing. It's like us having to get used to contamination. It's an unbelievable attitude. These people are just straight up murderers. Abe, fresh off the election victory, now gets to host Trump. This is October 23rd, 2017. Again, on foreign policy. I'm telling you, this is a little gem of a site, guys. You want to go find some very good reading and articles here. They report on things that you don't see in the mainstream. And it is itself mainstream. It's foreign policy. Like Walt, he's a social scientist who's written lots of books that everybody reads in universities and talks about who he is. Which I think I should write that guy and tell him, yes, it's about time. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's snap election gamble paid off, giving his Liberal Democratic Party and junior coalition partner more than two-thirds of the seats in the parliament and a political fill-up ahead of his meeting with U.S. President Donald Trump next month in Tokyo. Oh, man. So Mr. Trump, he's going to Tokyo. Raise his stature with Trump. We don't have time to read the whole thing, so I'm going to run through this. Okay, in recent days, the Trump administration has signaled it is seriously considering a preemptive military strike on North Korea. Abe, after his big win, focused on North Korea, but seemed to put in a lot more emphasis on diplomatic solution to the impasse. You think? We do not need a military action, which is why it kind of worries me. I was looking online to try to figure out how many more troops are they sending over there. I don't know if Nick's in the Navy, to be honest. I've never really heard that. I don't remember. I don't think he is. I don't think he's in the Navy, so this deploying. But, I mean, I was able to find something where they're saying they're sending 300 troops to South Korea, which I think is grotesquely underreporting. I think we have people all over the planet that they're not telling us. I mean, how else do you spend, more than half of our budget in this country? I mean, we have a really sad state of affairs with our country, folks, where we rely on brutish military force, which is ineffective and doesn't help. I mean, it's not the answer. Military force is not the answer. And in fact, the world is discovering this. The world is actually getting more peaceful. And it is the war profiteers. The United States and Sweden are the two top war producers on the planet, because they're making lots of money. So let's see what he tells reporters. My immediate task is to deal with North Korea. It will be tough diplomacy. With the mandate given by the people, I would like to exercise my command in diplomacy. So we have a lot to talk about with Mr. Trumpy, because he pulled us out of the TPP. Thank goodness. That's, you know, what's really weird about this thing with Trump is I don't think he sees himself as a traitor. He does not. He views himself. He's such an elitist. He thinks that he's, you know, everybody else is trash, and he's a decent human being because he's rich and white. and male. Let's not forget that part. He thinks because he's a male, he can do whatever he wants. That women have to just get used to being. That's what Donald Trump actually, Donald Trump Jr. actually tweeted out, that women need to get used to being harassed in the workplace. That if you're going to be in the workplace, get used to being harassed. That is his son's direct Twitter feed. I mean, these people have no morals, no respect. They're completely self-centered, self-serving, despicable Americans. They are the anti-Americans, if you ask me. I have zero respect for any of them. And did you guys see that thing on Politico? CNN reported it. Some guy in a tie had mixed himself in with the reporters at the White House as Mitch McConnell was coming out. And he threw a Russian flag at Trump and called him a traitor, that he's been colluding with the Russians to, which is a known fact. When they're saying, oh, there's nothing there, there's nothing on the Russia election, that's actually not true, folks. There's a lot there. That's why they're spending a few million dollars. I'll bet you that this whole thing that they're studying on, if we added up how much the Congress, the Senate, they're spending millions of dollars with attorneys and all these things investigating. This was a, why people are not angry about our elections being manipulated by, it's bad enough that inside forces manipulate our elections, but to collude with a foreign nation with whom he has financial ties, even though he says he doesn't, he's a known liar, and he does. If he didn't have financial ties to Russia, why doesn't he show us his tax returns? I personally hope that California is successful in getting this guy impeachment processes under the way. That's what makes me a proud Californian, to be honest. Like, people give California a hard time, but you know what? Californians are strong people, and there's a mix of people in California, and we have all come together. And it is not, it's kind of an interesting place to come from, California, because when you move around to the other parts of the nation, it really does run at a slower pace. And I think it has to do with the cars, all the cars. Buzz, 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 buzz makes your brain faster. Because I know when I go back home, it's just not the same. There are a few more stories that I really honestly don't have time to touch on that I did want to talk about. But I would suggest, and I'm going to keep like an old drum here, pounding away, please contact your elected officials. Go to congress.gov/bill/115th Congress/House-Bill 3053. Find the co-sponsors for House Bill 3053. Find out if your congressman is signed on there and ask them to stop. Send them the information from Donna Gilmore's page. And anybody in your state, it matters. We have got to stop this thing. And it really does need to be stopped in its tracks. It's a danger to all life on our planet. It, among the many other things. So, let's see. Jerome's going to have his first live show with you guys tomorrow. So I hope that goes well. He said he doesn't need me to get him going, so I was going to just get him going, but I think he'll be okay. I'm going to stick around, but I don't think he'll need it. And then on Friday, I'm actually covering for Barry Prince. And Jerome, I had already asked Jerome to be my guest on Friday, and then I came up with this idea of him doing the show, and he sort of went with it. So we're still going to do a show on Friday. So you're going to hear Jerome Hebert 2 days in a row, and the two of us together on Friday. We really appreciate you listening to us. And changing your life and taking, even if it's just one little action that you take, that does matter. You matter. Everything that you do matters. Put your courage feet on. Love yourself, you guys.